So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 10th chapter, verses 6 and 7. I'll read the first verse in text 7. So the translation of text 6 and 7 by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai and the purport. Upon seeing Narada, the naked young girls of the demigods were very much ashamed, afraid of being cursed. They covered their bodies with their garments, but the two sons of Kuvera did not do so. Instead, not caring about Narada, they remained naked. Seeing the two sons of the demigods naked and intoxicated by opulence and false prestige, Devarsi Narada, in order to show them special mercy, desired to give them a special curse. Thus he spoke as follows. And the purport by Srila Prabhupada, a fairly short purport, just one verse. Although in the beginning Narada Muni appeared very angry and cursed them, at the end the two demigods, Nalakuvara and Managriva, were able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, face to face. Thus the curse was ultimately auspicious and brilliant. One has to judge what kind of curse Narada placed upon them. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives herein a good example. When a father finds his child deeply asleep, but the child has to take some medicine to cure some disease, the father pinches the child so that the child will get up and take the medicine. In a similar way, Narada Muni cursed Nalakuvara and Managriva in order to cure their disease of material blindness. Om Jnana Tamirandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Gena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So if we've been following along with the story, these two sons were very puffed up with opulence and prestige. One of the interesting things about this verse to me, these verses, is the way that it's translated. So in the word-to-word translation, we hear Madhira Matal, very intoxicated because of drinking liquor. But Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that the real intoxication is opulence and wealth. People who are very puffed up with their opulence and wealth don't need to take any intoxication to become intoxicated by that power. It's said that the saying that money is the root of all evil, but money is not the goal. It's power. When people have money, they have power. Power to do whatever you like to do, and power to use over other people. If you have money and someone else doesn't have money, you can manipulate them. So we see a lot of this in the world today, a lot of the world leaders. I left America, and I don't want to talk about American politics. But since I came to England, everybody wants to talk to me about the president. And I don't want to talk about the president. But it's a pretty good example of what power and opulence can do to a person, the intoxication. If you see the look on America's new president's face when he's speaking, sometimes it looks like he's drunk with his power. He's got this power, like he's intoxicated on some drug. And that's the real danger. We feel like when we get something, we feel like it's ours, like we've accomplished something. This is mine. I've got some money. I've got some power. I can make these people do whatever I like, and they'll do it. I can treat my employees horribly and they'll still come to work. And we see this a lot. People have this. These brothers were puffed up with their prestige. They're demigods. They had beautiful bodies. They were surrounded by beautiful women. They were drinking liquor and they were swimming naked with these girls. And when Narada Muni came along, the girls, who were not puffed up by this prestige and power, were immediately ashamed. They knew the situation. They realized what was going on, and they covered themselves up. that of shame. But the sons of Kuvera did not, because they had this false feeling of prestige, this false power. And sometimes when you see a child that's behaving naughty, they get this look like they're Superman and they're having so much fun and they've got this little bit of power for a minute. And my daughter's changing from one stage into another. She's changing into this stage where once in a while she just likes to do something really naughty. And she looks at me like, "You can't stop me. I have the power." And sometimes she's right, because she's just out of my reach or something. And we get this feeling like we can just do anything we want. So they received a curse that was actually a blessing. This wasn't a curse designed to hurt them and cause them pain and suffering. It was a lesson. And we're all here pretty much under our own curse. We've all come to this world because we have previous karma that we need to burn off. And what's the purpose of burning it off? Is it so that we can be punished? Is it so the Lord can sit back and say, "Ha, ha, ha, this is what you get"? I never understood this as a young boy growing up in a Christian religion. I never really understood that the Lord really was as vengeful as everyone says, that he just wants to make us suffer and be punished. We're learning, we're growing. So this curse fit them very well. They were unashamed of their nakedness. They were in public like this, and they didn't want to cover up. They wanted to show. And Srila Prabhupada says that this is a real problem. When we see the naked body, we are attached to the material world. When we see ourselves, we are more inclined to be attached to our body, which is one of the reasons why it's recommended that even when we bathe, we're using gamshas and we're covered up. We never really, really do. It's because of the attachment and the sense of false power that we get, that this is my kingdom, this is my temple. This is my castle, and I'm in the castle. This is my body. But it's not my kingdom. This is Krishna's temple. This body belongs to Krishna, and I'm a servant. And it's difficult to remember that if we allow ourselves to fall prey to this feeling. So they're playing. They're sporting with these women, and they're playing, and they're intoxicated, and they're having a great time. And when this great personality comes by, they not only don't even offer obeisances, but they don't even bother to cover up. So he gives them what they desire. They want to show off their beautiful, opulent bodies, and so he gives them the opportunity. As we follow along in the story, we'll hear more about how they were cursed to live in the life of a tree and stand naked in the forest. During that, they were given a special benefit with this curse. It should be noted that most of us in this situation would not really be aware of the curse. In our situation now, we don't really remember what we did to create this karma that we're experiencing now. We don't probably remember our past life experiences and how we got to this situation. But they did. And so each second was like a year for them thinking about this, because they realized that they had offended Krishna in this way, and they were waiting to see him. So they were waiting patiently, waiting and waiting for the time when Krishna would release them. This must have been, can you imagine if you knew that Krishna was coming? You absolutely knew Krishna's coming. And I'm just waiting and waiting and waiting. But really, that's the situation we are in. We do know that we're going to see Krishna face to face. We don't know how long, but we have control. We don't have to just wait and wait and wait forever. We can actually do something We can work on getting back to Krishna. So we're not forced to stand in one place in the body of a tree. We are able to provide service. We're able to associate with other devotees, to talk about Krishna, to take prasadam. We should know just as they did, that the time will come when Krishna will be there standing right in front of us. He's not going to come because of our begging and demanding. And as long as we are wondering, when is Krishna going to show himself to me, then we probably aren't going to see him face to face. But when we start to think, when will I be ready to see Krishna? When will he want to see me? What can I do to prepare myself so that Krishna wants to come before me? What can I give? How can I serve? So we see people with a lot of opulence, and it looks like they're living a really demoniac life, and sometimes they really are, but nothing's really happening to them. Seems like they have all the good luck. You know, they get all the money. They're surrounded by beautiful objects and beautiful people. They have power. They can snap their fingers and people do things. People jump to do things. And yet you can tell that they have a very demoniac presence. How can this be? How are these people receiving such mercy when you see devotees that after some time, they've been chanting the Maha Mantra for some time, and things become difficult. When we're serving Krishna, there are times when things actually become more difficult materially. I mean, we can serve Shiva if we want, and we can be rich and have all of these things. He's very easy to please. Brahma, they can have all kinds of power, progeny. But we've chosen to serve Krishna. And Krishna wants us to be the happiest we can possibly be. That's not going to come from our material power and our wealth. It's not going to come from our so-called friends. I don't think in the history of mankind that anyone has ever actually loved someone else because of their money or their power. They might respect you because of your money. They might want you. They might need you. But they're never going to love you for the money. And when the money's gone, the friends are gone. So this is a false feeling of prestige. And this is what the brothers were feeling. It was just false prestige, false power. It doesn't mean that a person who has money can't still be extremely Krishna conscious and use that in the Lord's service. On the other hand, from the people that we see in the news that are using money in ways that we don't understand and they don't seem to be doing much good in the world, in fact, they're hurting a lot of people. And I have to say I've been fortunate enough to meet some people who had a lot of money and I never even knew it. I knew them for years, and I didn't know they had money. They were giving it all to the temple. They were modest. They were happy to be singing in kirtan. They were happy to chant with me. They were happy to talk about Krishna. And they were using their money for proper things. So it doesn't matter whether you have power, you have money, you have prestige, or you have none of these things. Everyone has something that we give to Krishna. I don't have money and power and prestige, and I'm really glad because I wouldn't know how to deal with it. It's not a good thing for me to have that. I do pretty good when I'm struggling. If I'm not sure exactly where I'm going to live tonight and where what I'm going to do, then I'm a lot better person, and I'm happier. at the end of the day. I have my moments when I may seem like I'm not too happy, but I wake up in the morning grateful that the first thing I'm thinking about is Krishna. And I say this from the heart. It's not something I'm making up. I don't know where I'm living from day to day. So every night when I have to find a place to stay, I'm really grateful that I have to ask Krishna. It's something I've been doing my whole life. I love being that close to Krishna. When you really need something the most, then it's easy. If you've got all this power, all this prestige, it's so easy to forget where it came from. So, as an example, I was teaching at a temple in America for several years. I lived in the temple, and we developed nice gardens, and people came. We had nice yoga programs. People would come for yoga, and we would teach whatever yoga techniques. It didn't really matter, but we'd always talk about Krishna. And at the end of the yoga class, we would always chant one round of japa together and sing kirtan for about 10 or 15 minutes. And then the people could come and take some prasadam, and sometimes we would end up talking until midnight. I used to get in trouble for leaving the lights on in the temple too late because I wouldn't leave until midnight because we'd have a group of people talking about Krishna. It was wonderful. It was really exciting. And my partner and I have different approaches to how we preach to people. He is very good. My partner at the time, the temple president at the time, was very good at preaching to powerful, wealthy, intelligent people. They make me nervous. So he would preach to these people. He was talking to lawyers and doctors and the Indian community that owned big businesses and these people. And I started a program at the prison. I would go into the prison and teach the inmates. And it was easier to try to convince someone with a lot of money and a lot of power and anything they want to convince them to surrender to Krishna is very difficult. It's very difficult. Now, some of these people were amazing to me. They amazed me because they were so detached. Even though they had all of this, they were still detached. But for most people, it's very difficult. On the other hand, when you go into a prison and you meet with someone who has very little, and they're in a dangerous, unpleasant situation 24 hours a day for the rest of their life, they are very easy to teach. They want to know all about the Lord. They're just glad that somebody cares about them enough to come there and speak with them. And so this was my experience. It's a dangerous position to be in when we have too much of a good thing. There's only, you know, too much of a good thing exists. We can have too much of anything except the holy name, except Krishna. In this way, no matter how much we get, we are always satisfied, and yet we always want more. So this is the real opulence. This is the real power we should be looking for. We should be dedicating our lives to this desire. We all come into this world with baggage. We're all carrying baggage, our past karma and our mentality, our cultural experiences, our conditioning from childhood as we grow up through life. We all have all of this conditioning, and we all see the world a little bit differently. If we held up a jewel, a crystal, in the middle of the room with a light shining straight down, each one of us would be looking at the same jewel, but we'd all be looking at a different face of the jewel, and we would all see a little bit different thing. We might see a different light, a different reflection. We all have our ways of looking at things. So those that are able to manage power and fame should do this in a way to preach Krishna consciousness. A good example of that was George Harrison. He asked Srila Prabhupada, should I shave my head and move into the temple? And he was told, no, don't. Use your position. People respect you. People listen to you. Sing the songs that you're singing. Write the songs that you write. But once in a while, add a little bit of Krishna so that they get this knowledge. And so he did. He was able to use that position. I mean, the Beatles, they could have anything that they wanted, right? But they chose to donate this place to Srila Prabhupada. He chose to serve Krishna by putting Krishna into his art and touching people. And still, most people in the world, the reason that the Western world knows about Krishna consciousness is because of Srila Prabhupada and George Harrison. Srila Prabhupada was the key behind everything, but it's people like George that spread this around and made it popular with people that normally wouldn't have taken to it. He had a lot of money. You know, that's a dangerous position to be in. But some people can handle it. Some of us choose to live in a temple. We don't have a bank account. We do our service. We trust that Krishna will take care of us. And it's not always easy, right? I mean, sometimes things just, it's life. Sometimes it's kind of tough. Sometimes somebody else is doing your service that you want to do, and they get upset, or maybe you need something for your service, and somebody else is always already using it. Krishna devotees, we look at everything as Krishna's property, so sometimes we're pretty quick to use other things, and there's a lot of distractions that come up. You know, we just use whatever's there. It's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be rewarding. It's a challenge. If we can figure out in our relationships how to get along with each other and serve Krishna together, we have a huge reward at the end of the day. If we don't, if we let anger and fears, maybe I won't be good at what I'm doing, maybe I won't succeed. If we let this kind of thing get in, then this will keep us from a really nice reward. But if we take that step out of our comfort zone to do some service that maybe we're afraid we won't do a great job, but we are assigned to do it anyway. Just go for it. What's the worst that can happen? You fail. Big deal. So we fall down. When you're learning to walk, you got to fall down. Nobody ever learned how to walk without falling down a few times. Fall down, big deal. Once you fall down, you realize it's not that big of a deal. Get back up. Skiing, I don't know if anyone here skis, but you can't learn to ski without falling down. You learn how to fall. It's not about not falling down. Learn how to fall without getting hurt. Roll out of it. Get back up, dust yourself off, and keep doing it. The thing we should be really afraid of is falling down in a different sense. If you're trying to do your service and you're having difficulties, let's say that I'm trying to fix something electrical and I'm having difficulties and it's not working. It's the challenge. It's the struggle. Krishna loves to watch us challenged. He likes to watch us struggle when we're trying to figure something out. And it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if you're cooking or pushing a broom or fixing something or growing something or the finances or the management. Anything that we're doing to serve Krishna in the temple is going to come with some challenges. And that's a good thing. That's a blessing. Could you imagine what life would be like if there was never any indecision or challenge? We just knew every day what we were doing. And this is the way that it is in prison. They're dressed so nicely here. I have to really compliment the pujaris. They're always done. There's a lot of devotion at this temple. I have an ability to judge things by a feeling. It's a security thing. For years being on security, I can tell when somebody walks into the room that I need to be worried about. And so I can also feel those that I don't need to be worried about. And I can sense and feel devotion, and I can feel trouble, and I can feel a good soul. And this temple, it's a compliment. There's a lot of devotion and a lot of really caring individual devotees. Nice relationships. This is the key to our success in this modern age. We follow Prabhupada's teachings. We follow the Bhagavatam. What's missing? We need to develop our relationships with one another. Everyone has something completely unique to give to Krishna consciousness and to give to each other. That's why we're created. Krishna has created us so that he can enjoy us. We are the enjoyed. He enjoys us by that loving relationship. He enjoys us by serving us, because that's the symptom of love. When you really truly love someone, you want to serve them. And he gets pleasure out of serving us. And he wants us to be happy. And the happiest we can be is by serving him. So he doesn't need a slave from us. He needs a loving relationship. And we quite often get tangled up in so many different opinions and advice and teachings from different sources. Sometimes it's so much information. We've got so much information in this movement. Sometimes it's hard to find our way through it. What we really need to do is search our heart. Who am I, and what do I like to do? What do I have to give to Krishna? And it'll be different for every individual person. And we should always consider ourselves to be in a very fortunate position that we're here. Just everyone that's in this room at this moment in front of these deities discussing the Bhagavatam, every one of us is so fortunate that Krishna has brought us together at this time and place. We should remember that about every person that comes to visit this temple, or every person we meet on Harinam. When you meet a person who is hearing Krishna's name for the very first time, you should consider that person to be worthy of worship, because Krishna has brought them to you. Krishna has brought them to that point, that time, so that they can come back home, because he misses them and he wants to bring them back into this relationship. And if he lets us be a part of that, if we're here when someone visits the temple for the first time, we should consider that very, very special. And you should also remember that each one of us, Krishna considers to be very special too. So for the non-devotee, Maya attacks by telling the non-devotee, you have power, you have prestige, you have wealth, you don't need this. This is you. Maya attacks a devotee by saying, you're not worthy of this. You're not good enough for this. And that's not true. This is one thing that I teach the guys in the prison right off the bat. We believe in God. We believe that God is perfect. It is offensive to consider that the Lord would create an imperfect thing. So to consider yourself anything less than perfect is actually offensive to the Lord. You're challenging his ability to create perfection. We are perfect. We are a perfect being. We're exactly the same as Krishna. We just can't see it because we're covered with all of this other clutter. And say that Krishna is the candle. He's the original flame. When he lights another flame, that flame has the exact same properties. We are that flame, the same flame as Krishna. The difference is our lantern is covered with dirt. We're covered from the dirt, from material existence. So much contamination. If we can just clean the glass on the lantern, you could see that same light inside. We're all perfect beings. Krishna knows what we are, past, present, and future. We see time as linear. Time is now, and it will be something in the future. Krishna already sees our potential. We're just not seeing that. It's not manifest. But everything in our heart is a prayer. If we want to be something. We just simply need to manifest it. That's all. We can manifest whatever we want. And if we want to be closer to Krishna, everything else will come. It's not that hard. You stop and realize that Krishna brought me here to this temple, to these deities. Krishna brought me here to have association with all of you. I must be something special to Krishna. I must be, or he wouldn't have given me these opportunities. So that gives me a responsibility. Don't waste it. If Krishna thinks I'm special, I should start thinking of myself a little differently. Now, this is difficult for me. I'm teaching this, and I know that it's the truth, but it's difficult to do. I fall prey like everyone else. So it's the opposite. It's the opposite of what these brothers were feeling. They were feeling like they were everything. They've got it made. They don't have to listen. Even when they see someone like Narada Muni, I don't have to listen to you. You don't know what you're talking about. I've got it made. Look at me. I'm surrounded by beautiful women. I'm intoxicated. I've got money. I don't need you. And they were wrong. They were wrong. Fortunately, they were given a very special curse. And I like the word curse, the wordage. It says that Narada gave them a special curse for special mercy. Usually, you know, you think a curse isn't designed for mercy. But it was. It absolutely was. They had a chance to think, to stand there in the life of a tree, and to think and meditate on the Lord. And when Mother Yashoda tied Krishna to the mortar, and he finally ran through the forest pulling the mortar behind him, and he pulled these trees over, and they were released, the ultimate blessing. So can we accept our curse? Can we think whatever our particular karma is, whatever difficulties we might have in this world, can we accept those? Can we accept those knowing that it actually is a blessing and that someday we would be able to see Krishna? We should remember there's so many stories like this, but we don't, right? It's real easy to think. We get stuck in our own mind I remember there was a time in my life when I actually believed that God was picking on me. I thought God was picking on me. Everything just goes wrong. How can this happen? I have such bad luck. I mean, even water would run uphill to flood me and cause me trouble. And what? And I started to realize, I came to this conclusion that I'm not that important, that God has nothing better to do than waste his time picking on me. You know, he's got better things to do. He's probably not picking on me at all. And eventually I started to realize that not only was he not picking on me, but he was helping me at every turn, and he was giving me mercy. I just didn't recognize it. I thought it was a curse. And it wasn't a curse. Krishna's taken away everything I've had time and time again. And I'm so grateful that I've not been tangled up. I've gone places I never would have gone, and I've met people that I never would have met. I've been forced to do things I never would have done if I would have gotten what I wanted. If I had gotten what I was praying for, it never would have happened. But Krishna's given me something even better. He's given me something even better. I don't like power. I don't like prestige. And I wouldn't mind having a little bit of cash once in a while, but it's not important. I do really well without it. The first time that I went to serve my guru, that he asked me to come, sometime after I met him, and he realized that I had a service that he needed, and he sent me a message asking me if I could come immediately to another country. It's $2,000 for a plane ticket. And earlier that day, I was begging my temple president to give me a razor and some tealock because I didn't have any money, and I couldn't shave, and I didn't have any tealock, so I was completely out of money. And I was staying at the Brahmachari ashram, and there wasn't even any room in the ashram. I was sleeping in the broom closet between the two Brahmachari rooms. And I was penniless. And I got a message, "Can you come immediately?" And I can come. If you give me your blessing, I'll be there. And by the end of the day, I had a plane ticket because I have faith in my guru. So we don't need to have money and opulence and these kind of things. What you do need to have is faith. You've got to have guru nishtha. You've got to have absolute unbending faith in the mercy of our spiritual master. The other thing is we need to make sure that our directional navigation system is adjusted correctly, because if it's pointing to what we want, there's a chance we're not going to get it. If it's pointing to what Krishna wants, true north, and any of you that read map and compass, maybe that's a thing of the past. I grew up with map and compass. We didn't have GPS. There's north and there's true north, and they're different. And you have to know the calculation in order to find where you're going on a map. So north, people have their directions set so that they can have good job, good family, a home, all of these things. And there's nothing wrong with having securities for your family. But true north, if you're going to true north, you'll all automatically cover north. You'll get everything else you need. So it's not about how much we have on the outside. It's how much we've got on the inside, how much we're willing to give to serve Krishna. If we're willing to do whatever it takes just to do some service, everything else will come. On the other hand, if we have a lot of power and prestige, we could be in trouble. I don't know, a lot of us have had a similar experience when we're neophytes. We first come to the movement, we think ideally about everything, and we think everyone is great, no one has any problems, I'm the only one that's had any problems. And then there comes a time when maybe we see someone struggling, maybe a leader, a respected leader, a senior devotee, or someone might fall and have problems. And it shakes our faith. It really shakes our faith. When I experienced this, I had to really dig deep to regain my desire for Krishna consciousness. And once I went through the struggle, I was stronger than I ever was. There's no question in my heart now. This was a struggle I had to go through. And what happened when my leaders began to make mistakes and fall, they have done amazing things for the movement. They've done some really great things. They've made a lot of money for the movement. And with the prestige, with the power, with the money, came the same propensity. And they begin to make mistakes. This happens. If it can happen to great devotees like this, it can happen to any of us. So we've got to be very, very careful. And we've also need to be forgiving if we see something like that happen, to understand that everyone is struggling their own struggle. And money and power is a harder struggle. So in the end, Krishna pulled the mortar between the trees, pulled the trees over. The brothers were released. They saw Krishna face to face, and everybody lived happily ever after. Hare Krishna.